And now, back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, and we have a wonderful guest for you. She's been on before. Dr. Robin Chutkan is a gastroenterologist at Georgetown University, trained at Columbia, undergrad at Yale, so she's got a great pedigree, and that's actually a wonderful thing because she writes well, and the book is superb. The book is essentially everything you wanted to know about your microbiome. It's really called The Microbiome Solution. And I'm going to ask her the simple thing most of our listeners probably know because we talk about it so much, what your microbiome is. But Robin, if I can call you that, and by the way, you can go to her website to find out more about this book or other books. She's the one who wrote Gut Bliss. So it's gutbliss, BLISS.com is the website. Robin, what's the microbiome?
You know, it's a great place to start. The microbiome refers to the trillions of microbes, mostly bacteria, that live in and on our bodies, about 100 trillion in all.
And so those bacteria, you know, if you look at it, 20 years ago, in 1995 or even the year 2000, I'll bet most people didn't know and thought of the bacteria inside your gut as not being associated with causing disease or affecting disease. When did this really get appreciated, and is the knowledge about the microbiome and how it affects each of us going to just keep expanding exponentially?
This really is the next biggest frontier in medicine. Certainly when I was in medical school, which was between 1987 and 1991, we spent most of our time figuring out how to eradicate microbes. The idea was the cleaner the better, and not just clean hospitals, clean homes, but clean bodies. So our thinking of microbes as friends rather than foes, that has really developed in the last decade. And there's still lots of people out there, both healthcare professionals as well as people in the general public, who really sort of haven't gotten that message and still think that antibiotics are super helpful to take preventatively and that the cleaner we are, the better, and constantly using hand sanitizer. So we've actually known about the microbiome since the 1600s, when the Dutch scientist Antony van Leeuwenhoek first examined a little bit of his own dental plaque under the microscope and saw these little things moving around. But it's literally taken us about 400 years to figure out that the vast majority of our microbes are friends rather than foes, and that they are essential to our own health. So it really is a dramatic shift in the way we look at health, the way we look at bacteria, and the way we look at the relationship between the two.
Now, what we've learned in the last year, and this is a long question, so I apologize for it, but we've learned so much that different twins, for example, twin mice that have different microbiomes, one will get obese and one will stay thin. And the same thing with high blood pressure, as if the different microbiome, the different bacteria, are causing these changes. Is that likely, and are we likely to all do something about it, and what can we do other than a probiotic?
Well, the most important thing I want our audience to know is that this is an incredibly hopeful and optimistic message, the microbiome, because unlike your genes, which you can do nothing about, you sort of, you know, as my 10-year-old says, you get what you get and you don't get upset when it comes to your genes. When it comes to your microbiome, it's changing all the time. So the microbiome you go to bed with tonight is different from the microbiome you wake up with tomorrow. And we can influence that primarily through diet. Probiotics play a role too, and I know we'll get to both of those. But what we're finding is that so many diseases we thought were genetic, and identical twins that you started out asking about are a great example, because we know identical twins have identical genes, but they often have very different microbes. So there have been lots of studies looking at one lean, one obese, and we see that, yes, in fact, differences in the microbes are responsible for the differences in weight. We've done studies where we've looked at obese mice, and we take the microbes from obese mice and transplant them to germ-free lean mice, and lo and behold, the lean mice gain weight, and they become obese without any change in the diet. So we see that a lot of these characteristics are, in fact, governed by microbes. But the thing to remember is that what you eat influences your microbes. So, you know, it sounds great. If you're overweight, you just get some lean microbes and put them into your body. But if you're not feeding those lean microbes the right food, if you're not, as I like to say, growing a good gut garden with lots of plant fiber, then pretty soon you're going to be back to the same position you were in before. So microbes do seem to, in fact, influence things like weight. They certainly influence risk for diseases, including some diseases we thought were primarily genetic, some forms of heart disease and cancer. But again, they are themselves governed by what we eat.
Yeah, let's go back a little bit. So what our genes do and what the bacteria do are produce proteins. They take food in, and then they produce different proteins, and those proteins cause the reactions in our body. So one of the proteins we always talk about is that is produced is trimethylamine from the red meat, carnitine, lecithin, and choline in red meat and egg yolks. They select, or bacteria that like those foods select and grow healthy, and then they produce a lot of that protein, which your body gets, which then causes inflammation in the rest of your body. And I guess the reason that the microbiome is so wonderful and so optimistic is that it can change quickly as opposed to your genes. So your genes will always produce those same proteins. You can turn them on or off a little bit. But what really you can change the proteins to a huge degree by the foods you eat and what bacteria are inside your gut grabbing those foods.
Yes. So, you know, Harvard scientists... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I was so excited about what you were saying about the meat and the diet. There was a fantastic study where some scientists from Harvard took 9 volunteers, and they put them on 2 extreme diets for 5 days each. And the first diet was just the sort of diet you describe, a high-fat, low-fiber diet with a lot of animal protein, things like pork rinds and brisket and salami and a lot of cheese. And the second diet was a low-fat, high-fiber vegan diet that was jasmine rice and onions and tomatoes and lentils and garlic with bananas and mangoes for snacks. And they analyzed their microbes before, during, and after each diet. And what was amazing is that the differences were apparent much faster than people realized. Within about 30 hours, the relative number of the various gut bacteria started to shift. But interestingly, the genes that were turned on or off changed too. So what we know is that the microbes can activate different genes depending on what the milieu is, depending on, you know, if there are a lot of bio-loving bacteria around because you've been eating a lot of red meat, the bilophilia, they activate different genes to help with the digestion of those things. So again, this sort of fatalistic view that, well, I'm going to get heart disease because everybody in my family has heart disease and it's genetic. You may have a genetic predisposition and an increased risk, but it's really the environmental trigger that determines whether that disease actually develops. And a big part of that environmental trigger is what your microbiome looks like.
We're going to have to go to break in a little bit, but when we come back, I want to ask you about aging and the microbiome. What we know about aging is that your microbiome, that is the number of different bacteria or different bacterial species in your gut, gets to be fewer and fewer. And the question will be for Robin is, and by the way, you can go to her website, Robin Chutkin, and the website is gutbliss.com. But the question I'm going to ask her is what she expects, is she expects that we will be able to change the rate of aging or slow aging over the next 5 to 10 years as this exponential knowledge about the microbiome increases and how to change your microbiome. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Go to gutbliss.com.
Packing for a trip? I know that many travelers like you wish there were more options to stay healthier and happier away from home. Enter Even Hotels with a wellness-savvy staff, a best-in-class fitness experience, healthier food choices, and natural, relaxing spaces. There's no excuse to miss your workout there with fitness options for core, cardio, and strength from their best-in-class athletic studio to the in-room training zone. Eat well while on the road with an abundance of simple, natural, good choices, including customized menu items, freshly prepared food for specific diets, and healthy grab-and-go items. Enjoy premium amenities to wash away the stresses. And finally, at the end of every day, you can rest easy on their premium sleep system that features natural eucalyptus linens and pillow choices to accommodate every type of sleeper. If you can't stay with them at one of their locations, enjoy helpful tips from their wellness travel site, wellwellwell.com. Discover Even Hotels.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herbs or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support to weight management to nervous system support to detox and cleansing and more, Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving them to his family from the very start. You can find Michael's products at your local health food store, your favorite online retailers, or visit michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation today. That's michaelshealth.com.
Breast cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths among women in the United States. Better screening and treatment have contributed to a decline in breast cancer deaths. However, not all women have benefited equally from these improvements. Black women have the highest death rate from breast cancer compared to any other racial or ethnic group. We can all help reduce deaths from breast cancer. Healthcare professionals can ensure that women get the tests and treatment they need on time. Patient navigators can help guide women through the healthcare system so they get the care they need. Women need to educate themselves about breast cancer and talk to their healthcare provider about how to reduce their risk. The full benefit of breast cancer screening is achieved when every woman receives adequate screening, timely follow-up, and high-quality treatment. Learn more at www.cdc.gov/vital signs.
Great party, huh, guys?
Yeah, it is. This is so great.
I do say so myself. Hey, did you know that birthday parties actually help build confidence in kids?
Yeah, I did know that.
Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Right, of course.
Yeah, I knew that. Did you know that strollers have the right of way on sidewalks?
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, that's true. Did you know that friendly kids statistically have more friends?
Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, so obvious.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Think I knew that.
No, you didn't.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Michael Roizen, MD.
RadioMD.com.
Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, and we're talking with renowned, and I use that word carefully, renowned author and physician, Robin Chutkan, C-H-U-T-K-A-N. She's the author of Gut Bliss, as well as the new book, The Microbiome Solution. And this, like her other book, very readable, well-written, and essentially everything you want to know about your stool and everything else that has microbiome in it. When I when we went to break, I wanted to pose a question to her, which is one that I care a lot about, which is, as we get older, the generic, that is the general microbiome of the typical older person, has many fewer species in it than the typical younger person. And I don't know how much that, and or if it is known, how much that contributes to aging. So that's the question that I am asking Robin. Does that contribute to aging? What should we do? Is there a way? Should we, as we get older? What I do is I take a different probiotic every day of the week. That is a different pill formula of a probiotic each day of the week in the hopes of keeping diversity in my gut, and that's probably not the right thing to do. So let's ask Robin, what is the right thing to do as we get older?
Well, you're clearly doing a lot right. So I think it'd be really interesting to take a look at your microbiome and see what's going on. I have a feeling your microbes are in great shape. But it is clear, by about age 3, our microbiome is almost fully formed, and it looks similar to that of most adults, although there's some major changes like puberty and pregnancy and menopause that are associated with some pretty big microbial shifts. But by the time we become senior citizens, we've lost a lot of our bacterial diversity, and our microbiome starts to look like it is. There are two real things that change: the number of species and the species diversity. Both start to decrease. The interesting thing, though, is the microbiome of older people seems to be hardier, in the sense that when they take an antibiotic, it's more stable. You don't see an antibiotic wiping out a third of the microbiome the way you can see it in younger people. It seems to revert back to its previously established baseline after events like an infection or course of antibiotics. So the key here, then, is what that previously established baseline looks like. The goal is to get to the finish line, or really not quite the finish line, but the goal is to get to being a senior citizen, which is hardly the finish line, with a really intact microbiome. Because once you do that, then there's less movement and it's less resistant. But if you get to that age, and we're not exactly sure what that age is, I'm just using the generic term senior citizen, but if you get to that age with a microbiome in poor shape because you've overused antibiotics and you've eaten a standard Western diet full of fat and sugar and not enough plants, then yes, your microbiome is stable, but it's an unhealthy stable. So not a great idea. Another interesting thing we're finding out is that microbes play different roles.
Now, as you're getting older, are you changing what you're doing in either food or in probiotics, and what are you doing because of the risk of aging? You're just a young kid, if you will. You went to school between 87 and 91, you told us in the first segment. So you're almost a baby. But assuming that you're no longer, and actually, if you look at her picture for the listeners, she looks like she should be carded for alcohol at age 18. But
well,
anyway, go ahead and tell us what you're doing.
Because I'm 50 next year, I'm born in 66, and I'll be, you know, an official AARP member, so it's very much on my mind. Two words: eat plants, more and more of them, because we know, again, we mentioned in the first segment, that if we're trying to encourage the growth of good bacteria, things like lactobacillus and acidophilus and bifidobacteria, they feed on plant fiber, indigestible plant fiber. So things that are high in a form of fiber called inulin. What's high in inulin? Leeks, asparagus, artichokes, lentils, oats, celery, the stringy green vegetables. Those are fantastic. I try and eat asparagus almost every day. I happen to love it. And I know it's a great food for the microbiome. Fermented foods like sauerkraut and kimchi or any kind of fermented vegetables are also wonderful. Pickles. Those are all things that are great for the microbiome. So you have to really think about the nutrient density of the food as it relates to the microbiome. And as luck would have it, the foods that have a high nutrient density to prevent other things like heart disease and so on, it's the same foods. It's fruits and vegetables. They're great for the microbiome. And you really see that as people age. You know, as I tell my patients, everybody sort of looks good at 20. You can't really tell the people who are drinking a six-pack of beer and eating a whole pizza every day. But as we age, we see that this changes. And this is another example where people say it's genetics. And we see it's really not. It's the way people are living. And we think a lot of it is reflected in the microbiome. So if we look at some of these blue zone areas where people live very long, we see that not only do they eat a lot of plants, but they use very little medication. And most of these medications really pose a real threat to our microbiome. So they're not using steroids. They're not using hormones. They're not using antibiotics. They're not using non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs.
Let me come back to that antibiotics, because there are a couple questions from listeners, one of which is, we just went over that Subway, Wendy's, Burger King, Denny's, Domino's, Starbucks, and all received Fs on antibiotic usage because they use it. And the question is, does the antibiotic in food change our microbiome, and for how long? And the second question, different listener, how long does the antibiotics does it take to rebuild your microbiome afterwards?
Both great questions. So we'll tackle the first one first. A whopping 80% of all the antibiotics sold in the U.S. are used in the animal industry. That's an incredible amount of antibiotics, and it does affect your microbiome. Those antibiotics can confer drug resistance in the animals who are eating them, and that can be passed on to us, as well as antibiotic effect. So some of the really unusual things we're seeing in our society now. Precocious puberty is one, where we're seeing young girls at 7 and 8 and 9 developing, going through puberty, getting, you know, growing their reproductive organs and starting to menstruate really several years earlier than they should be. And we think a lot of that has to do with not just hormones, but antibiotics in the food that the kids are ingesting. So it absolutely can profoundly, it's not somehow sort of destroyed when we cook the meat and eat it. It is absolutely, it gets into our microbiome, and it can actually jump from bacterial DNA in the animals we're eating and incorporate into our own DNA. So that's important to keep in mind. How long does it take? We've gotten into this mindset that you can just sort of remediate any damage from an antibiotic by taking a probiotic. I hear that in my office every day. Oh, I'll just take a probiotic and I'll be fine. Well, given the fact that most broad-spectrum antibiotics, a five-day course removes a third of your gut bacteria, it can take you years to rebuild that, and those species may never all come back. So it's like emptying a bathtub and then refilling it with a cup of water.
When you come back, we hope Robin Chutkan will come back, C-H-U-T-K-A-N. GutBliss is the, GutBliss.com is the website. Thanks very much for talking about your microbiome. We'll be right back.